Welcome back to the Covenant Eyes podcast. So glad to be here with you. I've got Rob Stoddard sitting shotgun today. How are you, Rob?
Good.
Well, we're glad to have you. So it's exciting to be on today because we have one of our favorite guests joining us, Matt Frad. Welcome to the Covenant Eyes podcast. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just now realizing that the two of you have lovely subtle headphones and I have this monstrosity on, but this is what I've decided to go with. So
I love it. That's like the rock star headphones. I like okay. it. Well, Matt, it's so good to have you. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Pints with Aquinas and some of the work that you're doing out there in the world? I know you're a super busy guy.
Yeah, not terribly busy, but I do run a podcast called Pints with Aquinas, which is a long-form discussion show in which we talk about philosophical and theological issues. That's it. And then I've got four beautiful children, lovely wife, and we live in Steubenville, Ohio.
Nice. Ohio. So you're getting ready for winter like we are in Michigan.
Yes. Here it comes.
Here it comes. Well, good. Well, we're glad you're here today. We'd love to have you on because you are kind of an expert in our space. You've talked about the issue of pornography and how it's impacting men specifically for a long, long time. And you're actually the creator of the Strive 21 program that Covenant Eyes has available to all the guys out there. Do you want to talk a little bit about your inspiration behind that program?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I've been speaking and writing on the topic of pornography for about 10 or 15 years, and so decided to kind of distill all that I learned into a 21-day course. Each day is about a 3 to 5 minute video where I kind of lead you, you know, in the steps to overcome pornography. I think most fellas know that porn's bad. They don't need to kind of be convinced of that, but they do need a battle plan. And so, yeah, it's very highly produced. It's not an isolated program that men go through. I think we've had 60-something thousand men go through the course, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And it's also 100% free, which is just awesome. So, yeah, pretty happy with it.
Yeah, Matt, a matter of fact, Matt, that number is about 68,000 guys that have gone through that. So, yeah, kudos to you for producing that. It's been a wonderful resource for us. And, you know, one of the things that we do always run into, though, is once guys have completed the 21 days, it really is a start to get them some help, begin that process of healing. But we're constantly running into, well, what's next? Do you have some ideas of what you've seen? What really works well as a next step after Strive?
Yeah, I like to think of freedom not so much as a destination that we reach after we, you know, submit to this program and pay $21 to something. I don't know. it's really a daily choice, right, that I have to make by my actions. And there's really no secret magical cure to this. I remember living in Georgia, and I got something in the mail that was accidentally delivered to me instead of my next door neighbor, who I didn't know. And so I opened it up accidentally, and it was like weight loss pills or something. Oh. And I went, how awkward. Now I have to go like, but it's like we all want like this quick fix. But I think usually it's those like time-tested things that we've heard repeated a lot that we need to continue to implement. I guess if I could sum it up, though, I would say the three things that I see that work really well in unison would be, you know, being accountable to somebody. I think maybe finding a certified sex addiction therapist or a good therapist to work through some of this stuff. And you know, sort of, well, I as a Christian, I would say spiritual direction. So have someone kind of helping you in your journey. Those three things to kind of would be important. And then just patient perseverance. You know, like bloody hell, we've been born into a pornified culture. This stuff has been foisted on us. It was on me. I was 8 years old. I didn't ask for that. And learned to turn to it whenever I felt kind of emotionally turbulent. And that's how I was raised, you know, since the time of 8. And so I know that we live in a society that doesn't want to take moral responsibility for things. And so because of that, we can tend, I think, to be too hard on ourselves. But I do think it is important to be like, you know, some of this wasn't my fault. I mean, some of it was. I chose to actively engage in things that were damaging to me and other people. But some of this was foisted on me. These were habits I learned as a child. Mm-hmm. You know, this and this, whatever you want to call it, whether you want to call it an addiction or whatever, obsession, habit, thing you can't seem to stop even though you want to, this didn't develop overnight, and it's not going to go away overnight either. And so I think just having patience with ourselves is a much, much better thing than just kind of getting angry with ourselves, which only aggravates the issue more, if that makes sense.
That's good advice. You know, I think you brought up a good point. A lot of people are exposed at such a young age. And as a mom, that's heart-wrenching to me because our kids are literally not asking for this. And it's being delivered to them on technology. So, Matt, you're a dad, right? And what do you do to help protect your children from accidental exposure? And how do you prepare them for this pornified world?
Well, I'm happy to share what I do, but I don't want people to think that I'm imposing what we do on them, as if to say this is the only way. But we decided to homeschool our kids at a young age and decided that they would have very limited access to the internet. Almost none, really. My son got a what's called a Gab phone, which is like a smart-looking dumb phone, when he was 14, I guess. And my daughter is now 14, and we've decided, yeah, we're not going to get her a phone till she's about 16. We didn't like the way that the phone, even a dumb phone, would take them out of the family. They'd be engaging in other conversations instead of just like being, you know, together. And I think homeschooling really helped with that. I think if I did send my children to a Catholic school or a public school at an early age, they would have been social lepers by the time they were 10. And I suppose the peer pressure would have been such that they would have talked me into getting them. So that was one thing we did. And we'd have family movie night once a week, you know, or I'd allow my son to play for an hour on the Nintendo Switch on the weekend, those sorts of things. So I guess that's one thing we did. And honestly, it wasn't even just because of pornography. It was just because the internet is a hellscape and social media is wicked, and I didn't want them having to battle that. Like, I wanted my beautiful daughter to, like, learn how to journal and not worry about what filter made her face look better on Instagram. Yeah. That just wasn't something I wanted to impose on her, so we did that. And then I spoke very openly to my children about pornography and sex from the age of 6, I guess. And then whenever we would kind of open up a new vista in the internet space, you know, like, then I would have that conversation again in a more age-appropriate way as they got older. And it was, you know, very much like, if you see pornography, please tell me. Like, I love you so much, and I wouldn't be angry, but I've seen what it's done in my own life and the lives of other people. And, yeah, that kind of stuff.
I don't know. That's really good.
Yeah. Matt, speaking of the internet, I caught one of your older podcasts where you talked about your one-month kind of stay from the internet and, you know, how you did that. Tell us a little bit about that, because I want to explore that a little bit in relationship to what we do and there are ways to help people. But let's start there. So are you still doing that now, by the way?
Yes. So about three, four years ago, I just started realizing that the internet was like eating into my brain, eating into my time. I would find myself playing Lego with my kids and wondering who responded to the tweet I just put out and what I would say back and, oh, I got an email. And it was just continually interrupting me. And I didn't like that. And so I began by, what I would do on Friday nights is put my laptop and my phone in a bag, zip it up and give it to a friend and say, I'm going to come back on Monday morning to get this. And I remember sometimes backing out of the driveway and then touching my leg as if, oh, the world needs to hear this brilliant tweet. Clearly, I need to do this now. And then remembering I don't have that anymore. It's almost like going without your arm or something. And I really enjoyed those weekends. They were just slower. I found that I was able to think more clearly, concentrate for longer periods of time. I would get reading done, you know, and So I'm gonna try to do this for a month. Now, I'm blessed, right? I am blessed, but I don't want to let other people off the hook too easily because my job involves YouTube. That's what I do. I'm a YouTuber, so I do work on the internet. But what I decided to do one July is bank a bunch of episodes, and then at the end of July, I gave away my phone, I gave away my computer for the entire month of August. And I have been doing that every year. This year, I have not done it because we're planning a sabbatical overseas starting in January. So I suspect I'll take it then instead. And it's great. The analogy I would use is, there's so many analogies. Here's one. I remember when I was about, maybe 10 years ago, I went back to Australia to visit my folks. I live in a very small country town. And nothing ever happens in this country town, except for this one day where there was a police raid taking place on a house across the road from us. Ooh. I remember my dad might be like, come here, come, look at this. And so like we're standing, looking through the door, wondering what's happening. And it was quite dramatic. And this, for I don't know what was going on, drugs or something, but the standoff or the whatever it was lasted all day. And so our whole day revolved around looking through this screen at something that really was none of our business and added nothing to our day anyway. You know, we go get lunch, come back, and nothing happened. I'm like, what have I done? And I thought, like, the phone's like that. You know, it just sort of distracts me from more beautiful things I could be doing. So that's what I did. I always choose like a book to read for that entire month. I'll even like schedule out like the pages I'll read that particular day, usually a bigger book. And anyway,
that's incredible. That's good. And I love
it's
that.
It's funny that it's incredible, right? Because like we're all old enough to remember time without the internet.
I know.
But I think today if you said to like a Gen Z, would you rather have no food on Mondays or no internet on Mondays? Like I think it would be a hard decision for folks. It's
for
weird.
Sure.
It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because we were with my son. He's a Gen Zer. So we were out doing some shopping and we were just like having a day in a little Christmas town that's near our home. It's all Christmas. Everything is Christmas. And he was on his phone and I was like, could you give that up for the whole day? And he gave us his phone and he did not use it for the entire day. And he's like, yeah, I'm totally fine with that. I hate my phone. I was like, oh,
bless him.
Fabulous.
Yeah,
but
I
that's
actually,
one day though.
That you give me an idea because see, my eldest is now nearly 16, so he has an iPhone, but it's locked down. Like there's no app store. The Covenant Eyes is the app he uses. It turns off at 10, you know. All right. So, but I might start bribing him with cash. Like, give up every day. You go out your phone. I'm gonna give you $10. I think he'd do it.
Hey, you're onto something. We could start an online petition of parents that join the movement, right?
Yeah.
Pay your kids to get off the phone.
Yeah, but when we, you know, when we talk with so many men and women, they're just frustrated, you know, with that device because that's, you know, that's where they're struggling the hardest. But yet, just like you said, you know, it's pretty hard to give that up. I think there's some meat in here to start talking about. What can you start to do? You started small, and I think that's probably the key. But, you know, for those men and women who are struggling with those devices, what is maybe some steps that you'd recommend to start with just to dip a toe into this and see where they can go with it?
Well, one thing, first of all, it's just kind of the recognition that you don't have as much control over this thing than you think you do. Mm. Like, I think most of us, we're defensive when somebody questions us, you know? Like, no, I'm not on it too much. I was just checking this one. I was just doing this one thing. I had to reply. Yeah, the point isn't that what you were doing was frivolous. The point is that it distracts human interaction. And you know, even just the idea that you walk around your house and you cannot clean your kitchen unless you have a podcast. Like, how the hell am I going to clean? I don't know how I'm going to clean my kitchen. I can't work out unless I'm listening. How would I possibly do that? Like, I think just kind of like recognizing that we're like that and then being like, okay, that might not be the best thing. And then so one thing I'll often do is I'll leave my I'm in my office right now. It's about a 5-minute drive from my house. I'll leave my phone and my computer at the office and just go home for the weekend. Mm-hmm. Go home for the night, you know, like realize that you actually, I mean, look, maybe people do have way more control than I'm willing to give them. Maybe I'm just speaking to myself here. But like you don't actually have as much control as you think you do. Yes, of course, you could turn it off and leave it in the front hallway, but you'll go turn it on again because you've become a slave. So like knowing yourself is half the battle. And so like leaving it in a place that you can't easily access, it might be a good idea.
That's a great first step, I think, for a lot of people. We need to take breaks from technology because then it helps us to assess how addicted we actually have become. Because I know for myself, you get so accustomed because our job is on computers all day. We help people and, you know, we talk to them via email all day long. We don't realize that technology is pretty much embedded into our day-to-day life 24/7. And we've got to take breaks from it or we will be succumb to all of the addictions that are related to pornography or just, you know, addictions to technology in general.
I call my wife's phone Greg. I'm like, is there a reason you're talking to Greg right now? Like, what the hell? Why is Greg here? Can we send Greg away, please? So just that, you know, to passively aggressively shame your wife, that I found that's really useful too.
We do not endorse that. No. Just
like,
kidding.
It is funny though. Like, if you did think of your phone as like this other person, it's like, what? Like, you know, or I mean, you can imagine yourself in a conversation with somebody or on a road trip, hey, and they're checking their phone and you're like, can we just talk? And then you feel I've got to somehow be as interesting as the phone is, which is impossible. So no, I'm very conflicted. I like everybody, both love and hate it. It's like a bowl of Skittles, you know, like you're always eating them and it's always exciting, but you're not satisfied ever. You're like, what am I doing? Why do I keep refreshing? Why do I keep bouncing from app to app to app? I hate that I'm like this. So anyway, that's me. And my wife said to me once, by the way, I'm a huge fan of my wife. So if it sounds like I'm making fun of her, she's a much better human being than me. She's my best friend. I love her. But what did she say? She said, well, why do you think it makes you feel so anxious? As if it was my fault. And I said, no, I'm pretty sure this is the actual human way to respond. Like, if you don't feel that way, like, I don't think you're in touch with your heart. I think, like, maybe there's something that you need, you know. I really think it's so, like, we've become cyborgs. I don't have one of those phones, and I'm not, sorry, the watches, the iWatches. And I'm not, you know, whatever. People seem like they love them. But it's like, okay, now I'm literally tethering myself to the internet. I don't. So every day I contemplate abandoning Catholicism and becoming Amish.
So. That's what me and my family talk about that too. We're like progressive Amish though, because we want to have the internet. So
no, I don't. No,
I'm just kidding. No, as you say that, I'm like wearing my watch. Yeah. I know. And you know, it's funny because I try to take it off at night. So at least I don't sleep with it because I want all the metrics, right? I want to know how much sleep did I get? I want to know how many beats my heart had. Like, we are just very much addicted to the convenience of technology. Go ahead.
I think a question to ask is, what level of inconvenience am I willing to embrace to live a more peaceful life? You know, because it is inconvenient to not have a smartwatch. It's inconvenient not to have a phone. It's like extremely annoying. You go to a store and now you've got to scan the QR code because they won't bring you a menu and all this sort of stuff. So, It is annoying, but it's the price you got to pay, I guess, to live an inconvenient life in some regards, so that your life can be slower and more at ease in others. I don't know. I'm just thinking this through.
It is, you know, the internet's so subtle. You know, we things like reading the newspaper, reading, you know, a book. Now we do that on our phones and on our technology. So we're replacing things that we did anyway, which isn't necessarily bad. But I think the real danger is that social media, right? I mean, once we start down that path, all those algorithms in there just keep feeding us and feeding us and feeding us. And, you know, when you talk about somebody who's struggling with, you know, sexual addictions or things of that nature, you know, we're just continually fed more and more and more. And it's so subtle that people just don't realize the damage it's doing. And so, you know, that's certainly where I think accountability, a good, you know, certainly a filter block, but that accountability is really key to have in place. So how do you help somebody that is just not sensing, not aware of just all of that that's being fed to them and kind of dragging them down that slippery slope?
Well, I guess, like, if I don't know them, I guess I don't care that much, right? Like, I'm really more interested in the people who I interact with on a daily basis, like, especially the people in my family, eh? Like, those things would bother me because I might see how it interrupts, like, what would otherwise be a beautiful night where, like, I'm reading fairy tales to the kids and bloody Greg shows up and or whoever else, you know. My son has a phone. I should give his phone a name as well. But I, you know, I guess if what I'm saying is not resonating, good for you. Like, maybe you live a super balanced life and this is all coming from me because I don't have an ordinate relationship and I'm fully well, I'm really okay, you know, accepting that. But if what we're saying, you're like, I know, then I don't know, man. I think there's got to be some personal revolutions that take place. We think of revolution in America, it's always like activist and sexy and loud. But I think there's got to be more people who just choose to remove themselves from the teat of Apple and Amazon and begin living, you know, local, quiet, more restful lives, and we'll never hear about them because they're not posting about it. And yeah, I don't know. That didn't answer your question. But.
No, it's good though. The ordinary life, there's something beautiful about that. So, Matt, I was thinking as you were talking about that a little bit, I'm just wondering, you know, you jokingly said becoming Amish and all of these other things, but I think the biggest thing here at Covenant Eyes, we want to help people have healthy, God-honoring relationships with technology, and we really try to help them find that balance. So, you know, not everybody can become Amish, but there can be balance, right? And so what are some good strategies for specifically helping men protect themselves from pornography on their devices? Do you have any recommendations as it relates to that?
Well, I like to talk to fellas about what I call a sobriety plan. I didn't come up with that name. And so the idea is not just avoiding what's evil, but actively engaging with what's true, good, and beautiful. And so if you think of a circle and two other concentric circles within it, the middle circle you might think of as a sexual full, and men might or women might fall in all sorts of ways, fornication, adultery, pornography, that sort of thing. And then the inner circle, so the second circle, might have to do with when I engage in these behaviors, I end up in that middle circle. And that might be, and I talk about this in Strive, but you know, it might be things like just cruising social media or whatever, not eating well, or you know, having more than one drink, something like that. But that outer circle should be filled with those behaviors I want to engage in that actually make my life more beautiful, more, you know, more enjoyable. And so I think it's important that fellas talk to each other in that way. Like, okay, I want to go to the gym 3 times a week. You know, I want to start eating well. I shouldn't be eating all this refined sugar. I drink soda too much. I'd really like to cut that out of my life. And now here I'm reminded of Jordan Peterson's excellent line. He says, what's something you could do that you would do that would make your life better? So that middle part's very important. It's not something. It's not like, what could you do to make your life better? Because there's all sorts of things you could do, but you wouldn't because you're pathetic, right? So what's something you could do that even you, like wretched, flabby you, would do that would make your life better? And okay, like, so baby steps, you know, and to start doing those things. I want to pray every single morning when I wake up, and I have a specific lot of prayers I want to do. I want to pray at the end of the night. I want to, you know, go on a date once a week. You know, like, I think that kind of more holistic picture is cool too, because then your accountability relationship isn't just, hey, I fell, oh, I'm so sorry, I'll pray for you, thank you, which is, that's something. But it's more like, hey, how's, you know, you said you were going to eat more paleo, how's that going? Or you said you wanted to exercise more, how's that going? You said you want to read more beautiful books, you know, what's going on there? Yeah.
That's awesome. No, good advice. I think a lot of our listeners can. There's a book called Atomic Habits that kind of talks about that little incremental changes over time amount to huge impacts. And I think that's kind of similar to what you're saying. It's like you've got to commit and you've got to make little changes and then have an accountability partner that can hold you accountable for what you said you were going to do, right? Because we all make promises to ourselves and don't always follow through. So we need that person. We need that accountability in that community.
Yeah, and to confess laziness, you know, like, because it's like, well, why don't I want to be as happy as I can be in this life? We can't be perfectly happy ever in this life, I don't think. We're made for God, we'll only be happy before him, you know. But it's like, if I say to myself, you know, it's really important that I eat well, and then I just go to McDonald's, and it's the question's like, well, why don't I want to be happy? It's like, well, I do, but I'm lazy, and I should repent of that, or I'm slothful, or I'm, you know, those things, we should acknowledge those sins, I think, as a Christian, and repent manfully of those and not make excuses for them too.
Yeah, absolutely. And through all that, or I guess overarching all of this, you know, is really that walk with the Lord. I mean, all of these things we're doing, you know, they pale in comparison as we move closer to Christ, you know, as we start understanding more of how he wants us to walk and seeking him throughout the day, just brings us into more of those right circles, you know, in life. And, you know, certainly having somebody to walk alongside, disciple us in that area, keep us accountable, in that area is going to be pay huge dividends in our walk and struggles in other areas for sure. So that's definitely key.
Amen. I've been reading the Psalms a lot lately, and I'm kind of surprised at how often God is referred to as a refuge, eh? Mm-hmm. And that's so important, I think, because it says so much. Like, if God's a refuge, then it means a couple of things. It means he wants to shelter me and protect me, and that he can. Like, no one seeks a refuge that they don't think is going to last or protect them. So, like, he wants to protect me, and he can, and there's something that's against me. You know, and I think one of the reasons our lives don't make sense so often is we forget that we live in a spiritual battle. It's not like a rom-com. It's not Survivor. It's not, you know, it's like there is a vicious war for our hearts. And I think when we forget that, our lives stop making sense. But the Lord is the refuge. And so, yeah, turning to him, you know, oh my gosh, Father, thank you for loving me. I give you my woundedness, I just fell again, my selfishness, Lord. I find that I am duplicitous, you know, like I say one thing and I do another, mm-hmm. and yet apparently you love me anyway, so here I am again. And no, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's an important kind of word of closing. I think that'll kind of bring our show to a close today, Matt. I think that's beautiful to remind people that the Lord is with us every day in every way. And sometimes we forget that. And I think if we keep our mind focused on him at all times, it will change our perspective, and it'll also help us prioritize better what's important in life. So I'm just so grateful for your time today, Matt. Thank you so much for being here. And we appreciate everything you do to help people overcome pornography, and then the spiritual wisdom that you provide them as well on your show.
Thank you.
Yeah. How can people connect with you? Can you give them a couple of ways that they can get connected with your ministry?
Yeah, they could type my name into YouTube and they'll find the stuff that I do there. That's pretty much the only place I hang out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or in the local Amish community, perhaps.
Yeah, just like looking through their windows, you know.
Love it. Well, thank you so much. And to all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in to the Covenant Eyes podcast. We'll see you next time. Thank you. Take care. God bless.